I'm Tony Riggs along with Victor Morales. This is VOA News Now. One group of Americans has had more trouble than most others enjoying the fruits of America's wealth and culture. They are the first Americans, Native American Indians, whose way of life has been largely relegated to life on reservations. But one tribe, Montana's Blackfeet, is working on an economic revival that won't compromise traditional Indian ways. Montana's Blackfeet Indians is the subject of today's Dateline. Here's Pamela Taylor.
Most Native Americans have a standard of living well below that enjoyed by other Americans. On the Blackfeet Reservation in western Montana, for example, an estimated 80% of the tribe's 1,500 members are reportedly unemployed. Over 60% may live below the U.S. government's official poverty line. But tribal leaders hope a renewed pride in Blackfeet culture and traditions can be transformed into ways to make money for their proud but impoverished people. VOA's Adam Phillips has more in this special report.
The specific source of this Blackfeet song was lost sometime in their history, which Blackfeet cultural advisor Curly Bear Wagner believes to be over 5,000 years old. But Curly Bear says that the spirit embodied by the chant lives on in the long-stemmed tobacco pipe ritual his people still use for spiritual insight and friendship.
When we prayed now, we prayed with our pipe, because a smoke is like a spirit. You see it for a minute, then it disappears, huh? And so it's going up to the Creator, the mysterious one, or in a white man's word, this would be God.
Curly Bear touches the bright leather thong entwined with his traditional shoulder-length braids and continues.
And when we pray, we always include all the things that are around us, because everything is living, starting from the sky, the sun, the moon, the stars, the clouds, the mountains, the rocks, the trees, the grasses, the roots, the water, because these things were given to us as part of our survival as a people. Without these things, we can't survive, and so therefore we always honor them.
Until recently, the complicated Blackfeet language itself had been in danger of dying out. But children like 6-year-old Akigopi and his 8-year-old brother may be changing all that. With their high cheekbones, tawny skin, and long black hair done in the traditional Blackfeet style, they sing an ancient Blackfeet song their ancestors knew quite well. Lorena Ollinger looks on, deeply pleased, and not just because she is the boy's mother. As a Blackfeet youth guidance counselor, she is part of a grassroots movement on this impoverished 400,000-hectare reservation to educate youth about their heritage through total immersion schools and other activities.
It's really neat to see my kids are even horseback riding. Instead of being a cowboy, they're wearing a pair of trunks, no shoes, no shirt, and saying, I'm an Indian. You know, they're so glad to grow their hair long and dance. And that's just something you can't take away. That's something that they'll remember for the rest of their lives and have within them. They're Indians.
Ms. Ollinger's own parents and grandparents discourage this attitude. A decision that still saddens her.
I was kind of like just a shell of a person because I could do really well in math and all those areas, but I didn't know who I was, and so I ran into a lot of problems of having any sort of connection to my community, and that had a lot to do because I didn't know my language, I didn't know my culture.
Many of today's Blackfeet elders were separated as children from their parents and sent to boarding schools run by Christian missionaries far from the reservation. Often they were beaten for speaking their mother tongue. Robin Bird, a middle-aged waitress at one of the reservation's few eateries, says that the practice ended some 3 decades ago, but that scars remain.
You see a lot of older people very damaged by the abuse that they lived through. They figured to break the Indian, we've got to break their tradition, their culture, and that's what they tried to do. It took away the hope of the Blackfeet people, but now we're learning that we can get all that back because we still have elders that can remember. It's okay now to talk about it. It's okay to teach us.
In recent years, there has also been a renewed interest in traditional healing skills that are still practiced by Blackfeet elders like 85-year-old Molly Kicking Woman. She combines the medicine in the native plants with the ancient Blackfeet prayers.
That's our prayer. Indian words we pray. Just like this one old lady, she's been sick. Oh, she's been just sick. So I told her, wait now, I'll fix you up. I had some roots and I fixed her medicine and I prayed for her. And next thing I seen her, how do you feel? Said, I'm okay. Ain't sick anymore. And that's what happened. So we heal a lot of people by our prayers. And I'm really proud of that.
Her husband, George Kicking Woman, listens to his wife and nods sadly. As one of the last and most respected old-time Blackfeet medicine men, he is deeply concerned that the prayers and the songs he knows, and the oral wisdom they embody, will die with him.
Because they're not learning the song. They're not learning the movement. They're trying. They're not improving. I think it's going to be lost.
But valuing the old ways is not the same as actually living according to them, says Daryl Norman, a Blackfeet who runs an Indian art gallery and teepee encampment for tourists just outside the reservation's main town.
A long time ago, you just grew up in our cultural way. Anymore, you have to learn the culture in a formal way. It's hard to be an Indian because if you're going to the ceremonies, you have to learn the ceremonies, you have to learn the songs, you have to immerse yourself in it. And our people are like other people in the United States. They work 9 to 5. That doesn't leave much time in their lives for these things.
Passes! Lubai! Victoria! Ruby!
Some Blackfeet, like Bob Black Bull, want to earn a modern livelihood by reviving the traditions of the past. We hear him calling the herd of Spanish Mustangs he is reintroduced to the area. This remarkable breed of horses was once favored by the great Blackfeet horsemen and warriors of the past. Mr. Black Bull swells with pride at the sight of his herd, which has grown from 18 to 118 horses in just 3 years.
Damn right. The blood in my veins is also, I think, the blood in their veins. They're part of my history and culture. It's intertwined. You can't pull it apart. It's like we both need each other to survive. They're going to give our children hope for the future. This is the pride of the past and hope for the future.
Mr. Black Bull adds that the Mustangs will bring jobs to the Blackfeet through an equestrian center that will help train young people in traditional Indian sports and teach them how to herd and sell the prized horses. He hopes the jobs will help slow the outmigration the reservation has undergone.
VOA's Adam Phillips traveled to western Montana to gather material for that report. Adam notes that however much the Blackfeet would like to rely on their cherished and picturesque past for their future development, they may need help from the outside, and only time will tell whether this interdependence with the world outside the reservation will ultimately compromise the very traditions preserved by more than a century of isolation. Montana's Blackfeet Indians was the subject of today's Dateline. I'm Pamela Taylor.